This is a Triple J podcast.
When you're 15, there's nothing more important to you than your best friend. For Nick Irving, his best friend was his older brother, Jack. They did everything together, mucking around, doing stunts. It was during one of those stunts a decade ago, Jack was killed right in front of Nick's eyes. It's a trauma he says will never leave him. But instead of letting that trauma consume him, Nick decided to turn it into a force for good. I'm Dave Marchese. This is Hack's Long Listen of the Week, a chat with mental health advocate Nick Irving. After Nick watched his brother die in his arms, he says his life spiraled.
I think I couldn't really comprehend the magnitude of what had happened, and I sort of just started to distract myself, acting out in school in any way that I could.
That included turning to crime. But instead of further falling down a path of destruction, Nick managed to get himself out and to find some support.
Decided I didn't want to continue down that sort of road and down that path, and decided to turn a corner a little bit.
But during his journey, Nick noticed he was lacking a connection to the people who were trying to help him. While they were all well-meaning, he struggled to open up to those who hadn't lived a similar life to his. So he decided he wanted to create the change that was needed.
Went to my mates and said, look, this is what I want to do, and we can absolutely smash it out of the park.
Now Nick's running an organisation helping other boys and young men overcome their trauma and challenges, and he thinks this kind of model could really help so many young guys who feel lost and disconnected. Here's my chat with Nick Irving. Nick Irving, thank you so much for speaking with us on Hack.
Of course, thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
Was mental health something that you thought much about growing up as a kid?
To be honest, I think myself and sort of our family, we were exposed to that detriment pretty early. We had a little bit of a mixed sort of upbringing. My dad was addicted to drugs and sort of struggled a lot with his own mental health. So that was our first sort of, I guess, exposure to that. I think as we sort of grew up, me and my brothers and my mum as well, that worsened. We were sort of in and out of rehab and psych wards.
Did you find that because of that, maybe that you really relied on your friends or your brother? Were you kind of always looking to talk to people outside of your family unit?
Yeah, my older brother was the rock, I guess, as I think most older brothers are. I guess you idolize them in a way that is, yeah, very specific to being that older brother. So he was sort of my person, and I never really spoke to my friends much about that at that time.
Can you tell me a little bit about Jack, your brother?
Yeah, of course. I think I probably have a bit of a biased view, as I said, that, you know, when you view your older brother, you think they're the coolest person to walk the planet. We were super close, so he helped me a lot through a lot of tough times, and I thought he was the bee's knees, to be honest.
Yeah, how close were you with him? Were you always hanging out with him? Did you have, like, lots of big chats, stuff like that?
Yeah, a lot of big chats, and we hung out heaps, which was really cool. We got super close as I sort of, you know, 13, 14. It was a really nice brotherly relationship.
Something horrible happened when you were a teenager, Nick, and you ended up losing your brother Jack in a traumatic accident. I know this is really hard to speak about, but are you able to say a little bit about what happened?
We were sort of in a period of time where we were, you know, going in the city, taking photos. There was a big urbex scene back then that we sort of fell into, and we thought it was unreal at the time. So, yeah, we're in the city taking photos for a night. As we were heading home, we thought we would go and take photos in a driver's train cabin. We were waiting for a train. We tried to get in, and it wouldn't work. So we figured we'll give it one more shot. It was me, my brother, and three others. And then we went up to the second train that came through, and the door swung open. It was unlocked. So we all went in, and again, we thought that was great at the time. And yeah, we're taking photos and hanging out in there, and Jack wanted a photo hanging out of the train. So we hung out. I took a photo. It was a bit blurry. He came back in and he's like, oh, I want to get one more. And then hung out again. And as I was lifting up the camera, I heard a massive thump and looked up, and he wasn't there.
It's so horrible to think of what happened, Nick, but to explain to people listening, Jack put his head out of the window of this moving train and he was clipped by a signal panel. He then disappeared, What happened then?
Obviously started losing it. And I was, did he just fall out? As we sort of pulled up to the station, I think it was Malvern Station from memory, I jumped out onto the train tracks and jumped down and started sprinting down. And I wasn't really hearing much, and I was yelling out his name and not hearing any response. So at that time, I sort of was starting to get a little bit worried about that. And then I saw him after running for what felt like forever, lying on the ground. And I'm sure, as you can imagine, it's a pretty traumatic scene. So I wasn't sure what to do at the time. And you know, I was trying to get him to respond, and there was nothing. And the other kids ended up catching up to me and got on the phone to 000 and was essentially trying to keep him alive whilst the emergency services got there. They obviously told me to wrap my shirt around his head, and it was pretty bloody. And another train pulled up and they jumped on the phone to the 000 operator. Yeah, it was about 5-10 minutes before the ambulance were able to get there with paramedics and firefighters, and they took over the scene. And unfortunately, he was pronounced passed away when he got to the hospital.
Oh, Nick, that's such a heavy thing to have experienced at any age. But how old were you at the time?
I was 15. I'd just turned 15 at that time, and my older brother was 17.
Do you remember what life was like in the immediate aftermath of that? Were you lost the person you were closest with?
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of friends around you? Were your family around you? Or have you blocked it out?
No, I do remember that time period quite clearly, I think. Obviously, when it comes to my family, my parents were dealing with the burden of losing their firstborn son. So something that was unimaginable to them, and our family again became quite disjointed. And my dad ended up in a psych ward quite shortly after that. And then our family sort of broke down, as you would expect. I had friends, but I think I couldn't really comprehend the magnitude of what had happened. And I sort of just started to distract myself with, you know, the wrong crowds and acting out in school and just trying to distract myself whichever way I could from that pain and what was sort of going on.
And what happened to your life after that, Nick? You said you started falling into the wrong crowds and stuff like that. But what kind of stuff are we talking about? Is it crime? Is it, are you not going to school? What did your life look like?
Yeah, all of the above, to be honest. I got expelled from school. And then again, once I was hanging out with these crowds, I was getting in trouble with the police. So, you know, fighting a lot. And I was just really acting out any way that I could, to be honest. I ended up at a disciplinary school for just under a year. And then, yeah, I lost a lot of years through that.
Was mental health anything that you were talking about at that time? Were people saying, we need to get you support? Or were you seeing psychs or counsellors or anyone like that?
Yeah, I went through quite a few psychs and psychiatrists throughout that time. I think everyone was doing what they could to try and be supportive. I just didn't want to bar it. I felt as though there was nothing targeted towards me that I was able to resonate with. I didn't feel as though people were understanding or meeting me where I was at.
It's kind of hard, right? Because there's such a shortage of mental health support as it is. So people don't really get to be choosy about what works for them, or a lot of people don't have any support whatsoever. What was the turning point? When did you start to feel like you were getting a hold of your mental health, or you're in a position to maybe move forward with your life?
It was a long time, but to be honest, it wasn't until more recently, you know, the past few years, that I was able to sort of really grasp everything and wrap my head around sort of what has happened and the way it was affecting me. I slowly started to drift from the circles that I was so close with throughout my teenage years. And, you know, as I was 20, 21 was when I decided I didn't want to continue down that sort of road and down that path, and decided to turn a corner a little bit, just with small steps. And
were you able to finish school?
I was. I ended up, I went to that discipline school until year 10. Mm-hmm. And then I finished VCA year 11 and 12. I didn't do well, but I passed and I got through it, which was a win. So
you got through, that's what counts.
I got through, 100%. Mum was stoked with that. So.
Yeah, what was your relationship like with your parents at this point? You've been through this rough patch.
Yeah.
Was it rough on them?
Yeah, I put them through the absolute ringer. I definitely pushed them to their limits, and I'm super close with my mum now. And during that time period, it was pretty strained. And as you can imagine, I was not great to deal with. So, yeah.
And your dad, Nick, did your dad pass away? Is that correct?
He did, yeah. My dad ended up passing about 2 years ago now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a big thing to deal with, like the loss of not only a sibling but a parent as well.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were able to deal with that loss in a, I don't know, like this is a hard thing to say, but like in a better way or whatever? Like did you feel like you were in a better spot in your life at that point to be able to process stuff a bit better?
Yeah, 100%. I think being able to, and this sounds sad, but being able to use what I had been through, it's a weird thing, but I was definitely able to deal with it in a different way. And I think specific to my dad, he had been through a lot. You know, our relationship was quite strained over those years. So, yeah, it was a definitely different sort of grief.
So when you decided you wanted to turn this corner, Nick, you'd finish high school, you're like, maybe I want to go in a different direction. Was it hard to break away from that crew that you were with before?
Yeah, big time. I think it was probably one of the harder things that I had to do throughout that sort of time period was disconnect and disengage from those circles. Baby sort of steps, compounding little wins sort of got me to the point that I was able to really click with some new friends and start to make some real positive change throughout my life.
How'd you make the new friends? Like, were you exposed? Like, did you go to some kind of community stuff or was it just people you were meeting? Because that's often the hard thing, right? Like, people don't want to maybe think about who they're surrounded by or whatever. They're worried about being by themselves and having no one. So they're like, oh, I'll just stick with the crew I've got.
Yeah, I agree. It can definitely be difficult, but I was lucky enough. I went to Sandringham Secondary for year 11 and 12, and I met some really great people there throughout that time. And that was sort of around the time that I was starting to turn that corner as well. So, yeah, I was able to sort of become closer with them. And as I continued on, met some more people through work. And those are sort of my best friends now still.
When did you decide you wanted to go into psychology? What was that?
I always sort of had an inkling, you know, it was always there deep down, sort of, I think, from the exposure to mental health early on. And then afterwards, I always had that. And then after school, I decided to sort of take that leap a little bit more. So I started off doing psych straight out of school and I dropped out. I just couldn't hack uni at that time. Jumped around jobs for a little bit. I was in a call center, which I hated. I did some labouring work, which I hated as well. And I just knew I had a passion for trying to help other people. And I jumped into psych. I started late. I was 22 when I started my psych degree. And then,
grandpa psych, yeah.
Yeah, genuinely. I felt old. And there's all these 18-year-olds coming through. I was like, God, I need to pick it up a little bit. But, stuck it out. And then, yeah, I was able to sort of start working within the field. And it took me a long time to get here and still can be difficult, but being able to use what I've been through to inspire some sort of change was really fulfilling to me and still is. So I jumped into the support work space.
Yep.
I mean, you can't do much with just a Bachelor of Psychology, unfortunately. It's just a piece of paper at the end of the day for that. But I was able to jump into some support work, which was great. And from there, I started working as a child protection worker, which was really cool. And that was my, I guess, sort of step more so into the clinical sort of field. And then from there, I jumped into Monash Children's Hospital. It definitely comes, you know, with a sense of you are hearing about things day in, day out, but you can be helpful from something that I never thought I would be able to use as a positive. I'm able to now transpire that into something positive. So it's definitely a cool spot to be in.
What were your thoughts on that clinical space when you were working in that environment? Was there stuff sticking out at you? And obviously there's a lot of people doing really good work.
Yeah, of course.
But was there stuff sticking out at you that you were like, oh, I don't love this, or I don't feel like this is the best way?
Yeah, I think as you said, you know, the clinical space has a lot of amazing clinicians within it and a lot of amazing people. But for me, I saw a lot of kids still falling through the gaps. You know, there wasn't a lot of continuity of services and nothing targeted towards that age demographic specifically that was really working. And it just wasn't rubbing me the right way. We saw a lot of readmission and, it just didn't seem to be filling that gap that was there. So from there, I decided to jump out and start Head Start and haven't looked back since, to be honest.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about Head Start. But when you talk about readmission, that's people who've come through the system and you've given them support, some help, and then they come back again. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. So they come through, and especially at the Children's Hospital, we were working in an outreach team that were for children that had been admitted to the emergency ward for suicidal ideation, self-harm or suicide attempts. So they would come through our team for 12 weeks. And again, I worked with some amazing people, and it was a good initiative, but there was just not enough after that. And we saw a lot of kids come back through, and it's just a nasty loop to get stuck in as a teenager that's battling with mental health.
How bad is it in that environment, Nick, in terms of how bad is the problem of this mental health crisis for young people? Because we hear a lot of statistics about it. It's always in the news.
Yeah.
And we know that it's a massive, massive problem. But as someone who sees it and has been in that environment, seeing people come into emergency, all that kind of stuff, how would you describe it?
It's definitely super prominent, I think, as a society. We're making steps to counter that, but it's so widespread, I think, throughout our society, and mental health is still so taboo as well. I think, again, we're making steps to get there, but it's definitely something that needs more attention, and unfortunately there still is so many kids falling through those gaps, and there just isn't enough services out there to really combat it effectively. Within that team and within that mental health sphere, just saw so many missed opportunity to really get in there and start working towards the prevention of those readmissions, prevention of mental health, rather than fighting it a little bit too late.
Can we talk about Head Start? Because you do decide to start your own platform, I guess, your own organization. Where did that idea come from? Because like, I feel like most people would be pretty overwhelmed by that prospect, but you're like, nah, let's do something different.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I was a little bit blinded by how well I thought I could do, but I just had a massive feeling that we'd be able to do it. And I had some friends that were working within this support work field already as well. So yeah, I just started sort of chipping away at it. And then I went to my mates and said, look, this is what I want to do. And I think we can absolutely smash it out of the park.
Can you explain what Head Start is? Like, what makes you different from other organizations, platforms out there that help people with their mental health?
Yeah, so we do one-to-one and group supports specifically for males. We have the large majority of our workers are all lived experience mentors as well. So we have that different lens, which is really cool. And I think resonates with the boys that we're working with. The workforce that we have is super young. I mean, I'm the second oldest. We've got our counselor, Mitch, he's 27. Bit old, and then you know, I'm the second oldest, and we try to keep a really young demographic of workers to really connect with the boys that we're working with.
Okay, and what sort of stuff are you doing with them? It sounds like there's a lot of mentorship, but I know that your slogan is like "by boys for boys."
Correct.
What does that kind of mean?
It always comes down to being a relatable mentor for the boys that we are working with. So, you know, we can help them, depending again how old they are, but getting them to school, picking them up from school, helping with schoolwork, a lot of emotional work as well. So helping them work through whatever's going on within their lives. And we have boys that we help find jobs and find housing and assist them within that. We also work with boys that are in juvie or transitioning out of the juvenile system, or that have had police involvement and justice involvement as well. So with those boys, it's about re-engagement in the community and, just getting them comfortable within themselves and helping them bring the best version out of themselves.
Yeah, what kind of experiences have a lot of these boys had? Like you mentioned, some of them have been in juvie, so the criminal background, but I'm imagining probably a lot of them have been exposed to family violence, stuff like that.
100%. A lot of trauma backgrounds as well within those demographics. And I always say this whenever I speak to people about it, you really see the other side to things. And I think right now, especially in Melbourne, Victoria, there's a lot of crime going on. I'm not saying that's excusable, but with all the boys that we're working with, we see the other side to it, and we see some absolutely horrific stuff.
What's the demand been like, Nick?
It's been nuts.
Yeah.
It's been absolutely crazy, which is amazing. And I think it, again, speaks to that need that's there that wasn't being addressed at all. So the past 6 months, you know, we've got about 40 employees now, and it's been crazy. And yeah, that need is really there.
Nick, we know suicide is the leading cause of death for males between the ages of 15 and 24, and it accounts for 1/3 of deaths in that age group.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of guys are feeling disconnected from society and don't know how to reconnect?
Yeah, 100%. I think, as I sort of touched on before, unfortunately, mental health within our society has been quite taboo. And as a society, I think we're making steps to be able to combat that. But I think there's still, you know, a large majority of people out there, men especially, that don't feel comfortable and don't really know where to go, how to look for help, or how to reach out and ask for a helping hand.
And do you feel like a lot of these boys that are coming through don't feel like they have good role models?
Yeah, 100%. I think we see that a lot with the boys that we work with, which is why it's so important to have that sort of male-on-male approach, as we can sort of break those walls down and be those role models for them in different aspects of their life.
I want to hear about some of the good stories of people that you've helped. Like, 100%. there must be so many, you know, things that you've seen that have been really amazing.
Yeah, and that's obviously why, you know, why we do what we do, and it's been so cool. You know, we've had kids that weren't going to school at all, or weren't leaving their bedrooms and not engaging in with their families or in the community, that are now out. They come on our camps, they come to the warehouse with all the boys, and they're out making friends, they're going to school and just being a kid again, which is really cool. And then we've had kids that have left the juvenile system that have gotten jobs and found housing and really getting on their feet, getting their license. It's really cool to see them, again, bring that out of themselves. You know, we walk aside them to help them do that, but at the end of the day, it's them doing it.
It must be nice for you as well to be this mentor. And you spoke earlier about your brother, Jack, being your mentor when you were growing up. Do you think about what he would think of all of this and what you've been able to achieve?
I do, quite often. I think I'm being able to do that more so and reflect a little bit more so on that. And it's definitely a nice spot to finally be in, where I can sort of do that. I never thought I'd be in that spot. You know, looking back 10 years ago, I had written myself off. So, you know, to be able to look back and realize that we're doing that at quite a large level now is really cool. And yeah, definitely a lot more reflective of being able to recognize that now.
You're pretty proud of yourself. I don't want to gas yourself up, but it's huge.
Yeah, it's been cool. Again, I never really thought I would be able to be in a spot to be able to do that. So it's been nice. Again, took a while to get to that point, but yeah, it's definitely been cool.
Do you have any message, Nick, for any guys out there who might be listening to this and thinking, oh, I have been struggling for a while, but I don't know what to do about it. I actually don't know where to go, or I'm just unsure if I've got the right community around me?
Yeah, I think, again, it's just about making those baby steps. I mean, when you look at sort of mental health, it can be daunting and you think you've got so far to go, but at least for me, and I can only speak within that, I guess, but it's just about making those tiny little steps forwards each day and finding at least one person you might be able to feel comfortable with in order to break down those boundaries and start making a tiny bit of progress each day. Just take each day as it comes.
And where do you want to be in like 10 years' time? I know you said you're ancient now at 26.
Yeah, but when
you're in your 30s or whatever, like, what's your dream for all of this, Nick?
I think I've been thinking about this a little bit. We just want to help as many people as we can and help as many young men as we can. What that looks like, I'm not exactly too sure and where we'll end up. But as long as we can help and be as widespread as possible, that's the goal. So we'll see what that looks like, and hopefully head starts all over Australia by that time. And I'm not too ancient that I can sort of take that in a little bit, but yeah.
He'll be on the pension by then.
Oh, yeah, I know. In a wheelchair, pushing myself around. I might need you to come help me push it, if that's all right.
Hey, Nick, if you're ancient by then, good luck to me. Look, I'm reckon what you're doing is so incredible, and you've obviously helped so many people already. And it's inspiring, to be honest, to see someone like yourself who's turned your life around and been able to help so many other people. So huge congratulations to you, Nick Irving.
Thank you so much.
Founder of Head Start, mental health advocate. Appreciate you coming on Hack.
Thank you so much for having me. Much appreciated.
Yeah, really interesting chat there with Nick Irving, and I'm sure you're going to be hearing a lot more from him as his organisation looks to expand in other parts of the country. You can go follow him on socials, see what he's up to. And if you like this chat, remember subscribe to this podcast because we're bringing you chats like that every single week. That's all for now. I'll catch you next time.